All right, so I have a couple of stories that were evoked from the Sunday service, one of which I kind of jumped into in the men's group, so apologies to any men who were there, but that's really going to be just a lead into another one that you haven't heard. So Rood's didge at the service evoked nature for me in a way that was profound, because there were no words. He came out. He just settled into it, and it went, and it went, and it went. And I heard elephants trumpeting. I heard elk bugling. I heard African villagers playing animal horns. And there was no word or explanation afterward. And then Jackie came and played that gorgeous piece of piano with that delicate fingerwork, and it suggested to many of us the sound of water. And then I later learned that it was named something like the sound of water. So, I mean, amazing. But it brought a story out from me. And then Adam went into the trees and the redwoods. And that just took me. I felt like I was gifted a trip to the redwoods from Adam. You brought a lot more in the way of metaphor and a lot of thought. But I had a feeling from that. And so I wanted to share a similar story right now, really quickly, a gift from me of a story that happened right here, where we live. Don't have to go to California for this one. I hike, as you most of you know, almost daily with my brother Pat, and we like to just get lost. We don't follow the trails or the roads up there. We just wander, and we follow drainages for the most part. And our little game is to find a place we haven't seen yet. So at some point on the hike, every time there's this, I don't think we've seen that rock before. No, we definitely have not seen that rock before. So that's what we're doing, and we're going more and more north now because, you know, that's the only way to do it. So we're way above Eden Valley, and we're heading toward Bobcat Ridge, and we're exploring that area, following the drainages. And Green Ridge is a ridge, and it's a big hunk of rock, and it divides us from water. There's a river over in Sylvandale, but we're just dry here. And right now, Green Ridge is running, and there is water coming down every drainage up there. And it's all pools, and it's all Jackie's music. It's just this tinkling right now up there of water. So the other day, we found the biggest waterfall that we've found yet. And we saw it coming. There's a big, obvious big gorge coming up. And as we walked up toward that gorge, there we were in a meadow of white flowers, tiny white flowers, and the meadow was filled with white, tiny white butterflies. So it was like the flowers were flying, that had taken flight, and were alive. And we were just in the air. They were all around us. We were just in this flower world. And we were walking toward what we could even hear a little bit of water going off a cliff. And so we came over that, and it was like Hawaii. It was covered in fluorescent green moss. So as we looked down this waterfall, and there was a ribbon of water flowing, and it was actually hitting and creating a spray and a cloud, there were hummingbirds there that had come to bathe. Iridescent, green, tropical-looking little birds. Well, they weren't even little. I mean, they were about this big. And they had red heads, fluorescent, iridescent red heads. And they were slow. They weren't like doing the usual darting that hummingbirds do. They were just sitting on tree limbs. They were sitting on rocks. And there was this one in the waterfall bathing. And it would just, it would just like rub its neck like this. And it would just rub its wings. And I remember saying to my brother, it feels like forgiveness. It feels like all this nature and all this water is somehow, we're wreaking such havoc on this planet as people, and it's still here. It's like all this variety and all these flowers and these birds and this water, and the water has come, and it's all just lit up with flowers and wildlife. And I know nature doesn't judge, and I know we're part of nature, and nature's destructive, but I felt forgiven, and I was feeling that from what seemed to me to be the other half of the service, which was Jane and Gary talking about forgiveness and talking about writing your own story and how your story is always evolving and it's always right now. And you never have to be stuck in a bad story. You can always, you are in charge of your story. You're the writer of your story. And so, and we're talking about restorative circles. And that's big. That's up right now on the ranch. And they're taking place. And people are being trained. And that's all going on. So I was having a conversation recently with someone. And they said, well, I get restorative circles here on the ranch. Because, you know, you have a roommate conflict. Or somebody says something that hurts your feelings. But I don't get it in the criminal justice system. It seems to me that, and this person's decided the worst possible crime that could take place against someone. And they said, you know, in that case, you can't just get together in a restorative circle and just say, all right, we're all sorry for whatever happened, and, you know, let's just forgive and forget or something. They said, you know, you keep that with you. You can't let that go. That's a place where there needs to be criminal justice. There needs to be punishment or retribution, or people need to pay, and those people can never release that in such a simple way. And that reminded me of a documentary I heard on the radio on the death penalty. And it was about the effect of the death penalty on everyone, on the victims, on the perpetrators, on the families of the victims and the perpetrators, on the jailers, on the people who have to administer the death penalty, on society, the cost to society, of the death penalty. It was an amazingly in-depth and amazingly brilliant series, just incredibly profound series. And one of the episodes was about a woman whose son was murdered. And she was the only parent, and he was her only child. So everything she had been taken from her. And so it went through, of course, the whole criminal justice system. And this murder, well, the son was a young man, and the murderer was another young man who was in a gang. It was just senseless, stupid, young people doing these horrendous acts. And so they went through that process, and I think he was on the way to the death penalty. It takes a really, really long time to end up with the death penalty, and he may have just ended up with life in prison, but he had obviously thrown his life away. So she volunteered. She had all the same feelings that anyone would, that, you know, give him the death penalty, and she was placed in a restorative circle process, or volunteered to be in one, and met with this young man. And of course, he was, well, you can, obviously, I don't have to talk about how profound the emotions were in this meeting, where they weren't in with lawyers, and they weren't with a judge, and they weren't in a courtroom. They were just sitting together, these two people whose lives had been destroyed. And her heart opened to him, and they bonded. He had so much regret for what he'd done, and he was so broken. He knew his life was over. He'd be in prison for the rest of his life, or perhaps even get the death penalty. So she began to visit him in prison, and they established this relationship. And in her grief and in her emotion and her loss, she began to mother this kid in prison, and over time became an advocate for him and got him out of prison eventually. And he, I forget the details, but he either moved in with her or just lived right next door or something, and replaced the son that he had taken. And so I told that to my friend, and it struck me as the ultimate example of someone who is in their story, and it's a story of such horror, unimaginable, the worst horror story there could be. And she did not leave her story. She stayed in her story, and she converted that to a story of beauty. And I was so inspired by it, and I thought, there is hope for us all. There is hope for any story imaginable. And so thank you. That's the story.